discussed many of the comorbidities that are increasingly more important when it comes to patients who are living longer with HIV, but what tips can we give to physicians to help their patients stick with their treatment programs?
I think starting therapy the right way is probably critical. We talk about anybody less than 350 CD4 cells, they should be started on therapy. Well, that's what's on the paper. But it takes a lot of discussion, and I don't really start therapy until that patient can sit there and say to me, I'm going to do my best to take every dose of medication every day as I need to do it. And if I have problems, I promise I will call you. I promise I will ask. I won't just stop my medicines. So I think starting out in that way and then holding yourself true to that, if they have side effects, having a system such that they can call and get some help right away, that they can get their questions answered, seeing them more frequently when you first start a regimen or change a regimen sometimes helps, so that they know they have face-to-face time to tell you what's going on or whether it's changed their life. So there's many, many things we offer. Pill boxes. It depends upon the nature of the regimen, how many pills, how many times a day. As stated, the newer ones are easier. Sometimes it's one pill once a day.
Well, I think this is maybe the fulcrum around which success turns. This may be the most important issue. It's not very exciting. It doesn't make headlines. But I think getting people to get on a treatment and then doing it every day is central to success. There's a slide I have that says medicines don't work if people don't take them. So you can pick the best treatment combination, you can make a brilliant diagnosis, you can choose something that's individualized for that patient's characteristics. But if they go home and put it on the shelf and it rests on the shelf, that has all gone for naught. So getting them to accept ownership of the treatment, knowing that every time they come in, adherence is going to be the first issue we talk about. And then I think the third element that really helps a lot is showing them what the results are. I like to show them, we graph their T cell count. We graph their viral load. And I'll say, here's where we started. Here's where you were. This is what happened in the first 4 weeks. This is what happened at the end of 3 months. This is what happened at the end of 6 months. This is normal. You started out very below normal. But now, because you're taking these medicines, and I try to be really positive and upbeat, and I say, look where you've gone. This is going to continue to get better. This is great. I'm kind of a cheerleader then, and I think it really works.
We also need to think about some of the social determinants of the health of that patient as well, and that clinicians need to be mindful of the social context where that patient is coming from. We know that if a patient doesn't have a home, they're less likely to be adherent to drugs. We know that if they're dealing with mental health issues, that's going to impact on their ability to be adherent with drugs. We know that if there are issues regarding stress, change in their lifestyles or lives in any way, that can have an adverse impact on their ability to take their drugs. So as we are dealing with our patients, it's also increasingly important to ensure that we either have referral systems in place to link patients up so that they can have some of that supportive therapies or supportive clinical therapies that can really help them to deal with some of those wider issues which can impact their adherence to medication.
Certainly one of the ways to avoid having to balance heart and the treatment of comorbidities in association with HIV is to prevent HIV in the first place. So what is the role of testing?
You know, I'm so glad you asked that, because HIV testing is such a crucial HIV prevention intervention. In fact, HIV testing is really the gateway to effective treatment and care for those who are living with HIV. And even for those who are HIV negative, it provides an opportunity for them to learn about their HIV negative status and to take steps to keep themselves HIV negative over time. CDC recently released new recommendations on HIV testing in 2006, and this was a huge shift in how we conceptualized and provided advice on how we should be doing HIV testing in the United States. A key component of CDC's new HIV testing recommendations is the routinization of HIV testing for all individuals aged 13 to 64 years in healthcare settings in the United States. And the rationale for these recommendations were really a recognition that we were not doing a good job of identifying HIV-positive individuals earlier in the course of their disease and linking HIV-positive individuals to effective treatment and care. So by routinizing HIV testing and looking for opportunities for increasing HIV testing across the population, we're able to achieve a number of things. First of all, we are increasing the proportion of the population who are aware of their HIV status. We're ensuring that we're tackling some of the stigma which is associated with HIV testing. And we're effectively ensuring that we're not offering HIV tests to people who we think are at risk of HIV. And finally, again, it's back to that gateway concept. By routinely offering HIV testing and increasing the proportion of individuals who know their HIV status, we're actually allowing people to be aware of their status far earlier in the course of their disease and to have a better clinical outcome.
We've touched on many of the comorbidities that are increasingly more common among patients who are infected with HIV. What are some of the key take-home points clinicians should have?
Well, I think from our perspective in prevention, what we have to bear in mind is that we're in the midst of a severe and ongoing crisis of HIV in the United States. Certainly at the population level, we have more than 1 million Americans who are living with this disease, and each year, more than 50,000 Americans are acquiring HIV for the first time. So this is a serious disease, and it means that we have to look at prevention as a key strategy for getting ahead of the curve as we move forward.
I think what I would like the clinicians out there to realize is that HIV is a very treatable condition, and that when one is treating HIV, you have two goals now that we have the ability to help our patients for much longer periods of time. One is to treat for success with your HIV. You have to have, in this day and age, an undetectable viral load, and we should be able to construct a regimen that will allow each and every patient to come up with an undetectable viral load. That's the premise we go into it with. Secondly, there are comorbidities. Some will come into care already having those comorbidities. Some will develop comorbidities as they age. Whichever they develop, our goal is again to treat two guidelines, the NSAID for the cholesterol issue, the target hemoglobin A1C that we use for everyone else with diabetes, the target blood pressure that we use for everyone else. Those have to be our goals so that patients can have the best quality of life from both the HIV aspect of it and the non-HIV aspect. But I also want to point out, even though we have treatment, it's still a very difficult disease. And once you're on treatment, as Eric, my patient, said, it is for the rest of your life until we come up with something much better, something that we can't even conceive of right now. So treatment is possible, treatment is good, but it is still not a disease that anyone should pick up now. We have very good ways of preventing this disease.
I guess I'd leave a couple of points, Rhea, here. The first point would be get to know the patient, work together with the patient, come up with an individualized plan, and that, I think, leads to the best outcomes. The second one is the importance of screening for comorbidities, I think, has never been higher than it is now. Because our expectation is that people are going to live for a long time, I think it's incumbent upon the provider to look to the future, to screen for the possibility that these potential future issues are lurking around the corner. I think you end up with a long-term favorable outcome that perhaps in the past was only a dream. Now I think it's actually a reality for most of our patients.
Well, thank you all for participating in this truly robust conversation today. And I also thank you, our viewers, and I hope today's conversation will help you address comorbidities as you care for your patients with HIV infection. Also, I encourage each of you to go to your computer, log on to discoveryhealthcme.com, and take the post-test. It only takes a few minutes to earn free credit for this program. If you'd like to see the program again, you can watch it online, download a podcast, or order a DVD. The graphics and references from the program are also available online. For additional credit, you can complete an interactive case study game brought to you by our friends at How Stuff Works. That interactive game can be found at discoveryhealthcme.com. And finally, I'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting the program, and I'd like to thank GlaxoSmithKline for the educational grant that made this program possible. Until next time, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health, CME.